straight from the headlines, bringing you our latest top newsmakers. This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, recording at our studio in East County. And today, my very special guest is Dave Myers. He is a commander at the San Diego Sheriff's Department, where he has worked for 32 years, and he's running to be the next San Diego Sheriff. Dave, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Miriam, and I'm very happy to be here.
So, Dave, can you start by telling our listeners a little bit about yourself, priorities, and what made you decide to run for sheriff?
Yeah, great question. So, born and raised in San Diego County, so native here, and I really enjoy the county. I enjoy what the county offers, from hiking in the mountains to surfing at the beach. I've always had a passion for law enforcement, always had the passion to give back and to treat everybody who calls for help as if my mother was calling for help. And I don't want to leave an organization without that feeling embedded within the current membership of the department and how they respond to calls for help. And from accountability, transparency, and community trust are my priorities, and that is what I want to see restored to the Sheriff's Department.
Very good. Can you give us some specific examples of the types of reforms that you would implement if you're elected?
So one of the first things I would do in office is I would create a complete transparent look at the department from the bottom up. Review all of our incidents, review all of our files, review all of our statistics, and have an understanding of what it means. Who do we stop? Where do we stop them? Who do we arrest? And then create a new narrative of how we measure success in law enforcement. The way traditional methods of measuring law enforcement is the number of arrests. We need to get away from that. We need to understand who we're policing. We need those who we police to understand, and we need to really restore that community trust.
Yeah, you've told me that when you started with the department 32 years ago, that the attitude among law enforcement was that basically policing was for the community, and that we've seen more and more an erosion in that trust, not just in San Diego, but nationwide, with people being suspicious often of law enforcement, especially communities of color. What steps would you take to improve community policing and community relations?
So, a very good question. And yes, across the nation, there is a growing discord amongst the police and the community. And I've always approached policing like this. The police are the community, and the community are the police. We live here. We work here. We play here. Our kids go to the same schools. And we have to get back to the basics of how we treat each other and how we understand traditionally marginalized communities. And when the minority communities in San Diego County don't look like the department that polices them, and there's not even an effort to understand that, then that gap continues.
So do you think that more needs to be done to recruit minorities into the department?
Absolutely agree that we are not doing a good enough job right now in reaching out to the minority communities to bring in more African Americans, to bring in more Asian Pacific Islanders, to bring in more Latino recruits. We have extremely low representation of those groups within a department, and an extremely low representation, if any, within the command structure of this department.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would think Middle Eastern maybe as well, too. We're certainly seeing a huge influx in the Middle Eastern population here in East County. For those that are concerned about crime in their communities, and certainly we've seen some increases in things like gang activities in places like Lemon Grove and Spring Valley here in East County, what are your views on the best ways to improve law and order and reduce the crime rate?
Very good question. So as we see across the county, especially hate crimes against our minority communities, where our synagogues, our mosques, and our LGBT communities and centers are being vandalized with hate, that would be first and foremost my priority, to bring back an understanding and actually stand up as the chief law enforcement officer in the community. Stand up and say something. Stand with those communities. Be very vocal about, we will not tolerate hate in our communities. I have an unblemished record when it comes to fighting those that want to victimize our communities, and it doesn't matter where you are. It doesn't matter if it's Campo, Hakumba, Alpine, Imperial Beach, Vista, Chula Vista. I have an unblemished record when it comes to implementing true crime-fighting strategies to ensure everybody can live in a safe and secure community.
And speaking of minority issues, I would be remiss if I didn't ask you about the immigration debate that's raging nationally and the effort by the Justice Department and the Trump administration to try to force law enforcement to essentially act as immigration agents, and you know, they're threatening to take away funding and so forth if a city or a police department is perceived as being a sanctuary. This certainly puts law enforcement and communities in a tightrope type of situation in a way. What is your view on that?
In San Diego County, we're very uniquely situated along an international border. Not only do we have an international land border, but a lot of times we have to remember that we also have the Pacific Ocean, which is very much tied to Mexico. And it's a very unique situation where I actually am blaming the federal government because they have not provided a true immigration reform. And when the federal government fails to do their job, when Congress fails to implement true immigration reform, then they look to state and locals to do their job. It puts state and locals in a very, very unfair situation. State and locals, as it is, have enough to do in enforcing state and local laws, and then the expectation brought on by the federal government to somehow enforce federal law along an international border where the federal government has failed to do so puts local law enforcement in a very unfair situation and very unfair to the citizens they have been sworn to protect. Now, enforcing immigration law is not the job of local law enforcement.
We were talking before the show, and you've indicated that forcing people to feel like they have to live in the shadows if they're undocumented and be afraid to come forward to law enforcement can actually be dangerous for communities if somebody is a witness to a crime. For example, you told me a story earlier.
Yeah, Miriam. So what the current attorney general and the president are doing, they are going to, if they pursue this doctrine of local law enforcement enforcing immigration laws, is going to force those immigrants into the shadows. And I could tell you from personal experience that all that does is create additional victims who will not report crimes. And it also emboldens the criminals that prey on them because they know who they can prey on and who will not report crimes. And the case you're talking about is a very tragic case several years ago where a Latina who was not here legally, who had been working for several years, doing her job, paying taxes, had two children here who were citizens, lived by herself, was raising the kids, and over a period of two years, a neighbor was molesting her boys.
Tragic.
And it was absolutely tragic that her fear was that if she reported it, that she would be deported. And her law enforcement does not need to victimize these individuals by somehow implying that we're going to enforce immigration laws. We have to get away from that.
Okay. What are your views on realignment? And specifically, how good a job Sheriff Gore has done in terms of how he has addressed the issue of the state transferring a large number of prisoners from the state prison system into the local jails?
So I have to go back to realignment, and I tie realignment into two additional propositions, 47 and 57. It was pushed at the state level by the governor and the legislator, and it tied also the realignment of state prisoners to county jails.
Yeah, we should note that this was fueled in part by lawsuits and a federal judge who said their prisons were overcrowded at the state level and they had to either let them go, build more prisons, but that takes time, or transfer some of them back down to the county level, which is essentially the option that was chosen.
Yeah, so what the state did was, because the state prison system was being sued for not providing proper medical treatment for the state inmates, so what the state government did was transfer the risk to counties, and but did not follow it up with proper funding. And the funding I'm talking about specifically is for mental illness and long-term drug treatment.
Yeah.
And that funding has not followed. That funding, that promised funding, so that we can provide long-term drug treatment and long-term mental health treatment in the community, did not follow. And the sheriff was silent on it. Yet the sheriff asks deputy sheriffs every single day to get back in on the communities, go back out there now in a completely different environment, try and enforce the laws against these previously violent offenders who now have to be arrested for misdemeanors, and there's nothing to catch these individuals. And it's, I think it's ridiculous that he was silent on those issues and still is, but continues to demand that deputies go out and do their jobs.
So you would be more outspoken in trying to persuade the state legislature to shake loose some funds for that.
I would be in Sacramento pounding on the governor's desk, demanding that they send the promised funds to the county so that they can do the drug treatment.
Okay, very good. On another issue, we have seen a lot of heartbreak over missing children and missing persons at risk. And what I often hear from families is that they do not believe enough is done in those critical first hours when somebody goes missing. They're pretty good if it's, you know, someone with Alzheimer's or someone that maybe might be suicidal. But it seems like in the case particularly of missing teenagers, missing young person, too often the assumption is they must just be a runaway. And yet runaways can be at risk. We know that they can be trafficked and kidnapped and all sorts of things. And, you know, by the time someone realizes they're not coming back, it's too late. Do you think more should be done to get word out early on if a parent wants media notified?
You know, I think there are, our kids are our future, and our kids need true wraparound services in order to help raise them. And it's really tough on parents these days. And when just something as simple as a runaway, you know, I think that Sheriff Gore really fails our deputies in the field when he doesn't provide them with resources. And the deputies in the field really do care. They want to do something. They want to help. But when the chief law enforcement officer in this county fails to provide them with the tools that will allow them, something as simple as using social media now to get the word out.
Yeah.
The sheriff's department to use social media to get the word out about these runaways who need help so that they can't be victimized, so they can't be preyed upon, to get them back to where they need to be.
Yeah, that's wonderful to hear. We also run the East County Wildfire and Emergency Alert Service, and I know I've asked over and over, can we get word faster on these missing kids? I have a huge network here. We could, you know, hit send, and it goes out to an awful lot of people, and they just have their protocols, and it hasn't really been done in those early hours. So that's good to hear.
When Beyonce released her latest album online, it hit over 3 million views the first day.
Very good. So social media certainly is a very powerful way to reach a lot of people very quickly. Now, speaking of social media, Sheriff Gore used to have a Facebook page, and he got rid of it because people had posted some negative things. And I guess the court said that if you're a public figure and you have a website, you can't take down just the stuff you don't like. It either all stays or it all comes down. Would you reinstate a Facebook page?
So I would use every avenue of social media that I can as sheriff, from Facebook to Instagram to Snapchat, to be able to communicate with the public. That's seems to be a manner in which the public likes to interact with its law enforcement. And that goes back to one of my main themes, which is transparency. The current sheriff is afraid of the public to know what's going on in its law enforcement agency.
Here in East County, we sometimes hear complaints about long delays in sheriff service in rural issues. We actually did a story on that a few years ago, and we found that in some of the rural areas, it could take an hour or more, even for the most severe level of crimes. The common refrain out here is, you know, people will call the Border Patrol if it's really serious because they'll get there faster often than the sheriff will. Is there anything, I know budgets are constrained, but is there anything more that can be done to speed up the response of law enforcement in the rural areas?
You know, that's a very good question. And having worked out there several years ago in the backcountry, it's what we call a rural division, which means we do not have 24-hour service out there for the sheriff, and that the deputies live on the beat. So at night, the deputies actually are called out to respond to calls. And you're absolutely right. Depending on the type of call, the response time could be an hour. I am absolutely committed to looking at ways to facilitate a faster response, because it does also, our response time doesn't also affect just the rural areas. It affects other communities that we serve. And I think when somebody picks up the phone and either calls for help or calls to report a crime, that they should expect a reasonable response to their request.
Yeah, it seems like what we often see is there will be increases in funding to the sheriff department, and it all seems to get spent on building more substations, buying more equipment, all the bells and whistles, the high-tech stuff, and not on just having more officers out on the beat in those rural areas.
Yeah, and you know, sheriff's department has been around since 1856, and they're still policing the same manner. And it goes back to one of the original themes for running for the office of the sheriff is we seem to be stuck in the old way of doing things, and we have to get out of that and completely rethink how we police.
Okay. Another question I had is about the trend we're seeing nationally toward militarization of police departments, as well as asset forfeiture issues where they, you know, seize money used for law enforcement. Let's take that two parts, I guess. Are you concerned about the increasing militarization that we're seeing in law enforcement departments where they have things like, you know, tanks and full body armor sometimes? Does that have a negative influence on community policing relationships?
You know, where I think the negative community policing starts is not understanding what a armored vehicle is used for. We saw a very vivid case on the news not too long ago where two children were kidnapped. The kidnapper ended up stopping on a bridge in Lakeside. And armored vehicle was used to rescue the kids. Mm. And I don't think anybody out there would deny that that vehicle was very useful in saving those kids' lives.
Right.
That's a very appropriate use of that. And so that goes back to that whole transparent policing agency and what it's used for.
So it really goes to the guy in charge and picking and choosing which incidents to deploy the various things that they have at their disposal.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. We need a leader out there that's not afraid to stand up and say, yes, we purchased this armored vehicle because we can save lives with it. And we need a law enforcement sheriff in this county that's going to stand up and say, no, we're not going to buy bayonets to put on the end of our guns. We don't do that. There's no legitimate law enforcement use. Some agencies have used, have purchased rocket launchers or things like that. There's no legitimate law enforcement use for things like that.
What do you think about drones?
So I'm actually was the one that pushed for several years to have UASs or drones implemented for local law enforcement. And the reason is it saves lives. It facilitates things from monitoring crime scenes to monitoring traffic accidents to monitoring chemical spills. But there again, we're not using it to follow people. We're not using it to collect data on people. And the fear that that is being done means that the chief law enforcement officer is not out there ensuring the public in a very transparent manner what this new technology is and how it can be beneficial.
It seems like it would be useful in search and rescues if it's maybe after dark or sometime when you can't fly a, you know, multi-million dollar helicopter in there and put lives at risk, but maybe a drone might be able to help identify where somebody is or drop in water or a blanket or something.
You know, one of the things you talked about earlier is the East County Fire Notification System. So what if you were able to use this drone and for citizens in the area, if in an emergency, were able to dial up an app and you could see a safe avenue to escape?
Be great.
It would be something that's very, very useful to everybody. I've been on the 2003 wildfire. I was on the 2007 wildfire. And one of the things that really upset people when they could not evacuate their animals. So if we were to show, if we were to show and share that technology and not be afraid with the public where they could dial in on an app and actually see the video that we're seeing that number one, the animals are safe or number two, a safe way to get in and a safe way to get out.
Brilliant. We certainly saw a lot of problems during the border fire up there, which happened on Father's Day. A lot of people weren't home. It was triple digit heat, but we found that Animal Services was overwhelmed and there were a lot of animals back there that were just starving and not having enough water, and issues where well-meaning rescuers came up and tried to deliver goods, and you had people, you know, sheriff deputies at the barricade saying, no, you can't pass goods over, water and food for animals, over the barricade to people who had voluntarily chosen not to evacuate and were trying to save their neighbors' livestock that had, or pets that had been left behind. So sometimes it can be carried to extremes, it seems. But you're right about the evacuation situation. Many times my reporters have been out there, and they would find that people were not evacuating from a town because they had horses or they had, you know, sheep or goats, and they were afraid they wouldn't be allowed back in to tend to the animals, and so they were just putting their own lives at risk. And Nadine, one of our reporters we've had through the years, many times has gone out and asked the CAL FIRE guys from out of town, hey, you know, did you know this is going on? And what about opening a large animal shelter? And suddenly you'll have 40 people with their horses down there looking for a place to stay.
You know, many of the law enforcement deputies out there have pets. I'm an absolute pet lover myself. And I remember doing everything that I could to get people in, to get their animals, their pets, to a safe place, because nobody wants to see the animals get hurt. Nobody wants to see the people get hurt. But we have technology that can help facilitate that, to where either you feel comfortable that your animals or pets are not threatened, or a safe way to get in and get out. And we should utilize that.
Yeah, great idea. Another question for you. The other approach to crime, of course, is how do we stop the school-to-prison pipeline? And beyond that, once somebody does become a first-time offender, how do we keep them from reoffending and reduce the recidivism rate? Is that an area where you believe the sheriff's department should be active and doing more?
You know, I think we really can have an impact starting with our kids. For years, I've tried to push the restorative justice process into the juvenile justice process. Our toolbox in law enforcement lately has been, you do something wrong, somebody calls the police, you get arrested, you go to jail. We've got to rethink that. On average, it costs $64,000 a year to house an adult inmate. On average, it costs $250,000 a year to house a juvenile. We have to stop that. The restorative justice process has been used and has been proven to work, especially with kids. If we can embed that thinking now, involve the community, involve a third party, involve law enforcement at breaking that cycle of school to prison, avoiding that pipeline to prison, I think our communities will be much safer in the future.
Yeah. And what about preventing the recidivism once someone has committed an offense, hopefully a minor one, maybe for the first time?
So once a person has committed a crime, I think we do need to embed some sort of process within an institution, a juvenile institution or an adult institution, to ensure that either if it's education, if it's drug treatment, if it's underlying mental health issues or job training.
Yeah.
But don't stop there. We have to have complete wraparound services. So when these individuals are released, that is the test for recidivism. And I think the chief law enforcement officer has a say-so, but it's a say-so in a community that doesn't stop at, okay, we'll help you for a month out or 2 months out. These are true long-term goals that I think a law enforcement agency should be at the table.
You have told me earlier that as far as the asset forfeiture program, that you had some innovative ideas for how you would like to spend funds that the department receives through that program, and also that you think there should be some limits on the types of assets that could be seized. Can you elaborate, please?
I do believe that the asset seizure program is a good crime-fighting tool. Now, there has to be true accountability and transparency in the process, especially when it comes to personal properties, homes, vehicles, animals, and when it comes to cash. There needs to be a different standard. Now, embedded within that different standard and the assets you do seize is how do we use them? How does law enforcement use them? I know from personal experience that law enforcement has been able to use it to buy certain equipment or help facilitate the building of a new station, I think, which is good for a community. But what I also think the law enforcement needs to do is really expand the role of seized assets into community organizations, not-for-profit organizations that are there to facilitate suicide prevention in kids, to help veterans get back on their feet, to house the mental ill long-term and provide drug treatment, true community-based organizations, but not like Bill Gore is doing, which is handing out favors with the money and no oversight. The community has to be at the table. We need community representatives at the table to have an equal say in where this money goes, and there has to be follow-up.
Yeah, very good points, Dave. You've also mentioned that while you support the seizure of, say, large amounts of cash that are found in drug raids, that sort of thing, that you think there should be some limits on property seizures. Can you explain that?
Yeah, you know, when it comes to personal property, homes, vehicles, I think there needs to be a higher standard when seizing these items. And I think a criminal conviction could be that, should be that standard. When it comes to large amounts of cash seizures, I don't think it should be necessarily contingent on a criminal conviction, because oftentimes there's plea bargains that take place and agreements that happen that would not meet that standard. But it's I think it needs a complete review of how we how law enforcement understands it and how the community understands the seizure of assets.
Sure, because of course if you take somebody's home or their vehicle, it's not only harming the person who presumably did the crime or allegedly did the crime, but potentially the entire family. If it was the family car, the family home, then, you know, you have maybe innocent people getting drawn into that.
We don't want to create additional homeless problems.
Okay. All right. Very good. Is there anything else, Dave, that you would like to talk about that we haven't brought up today?
You know, in our community, our county of San Diego is completely changing. It has changed. The fastest growing populations are Latino and Asian Pacific Islander. I think our department of 4,200 people should represent that, and we should make every effort to represent that. We have complete misrepresentation of traditionally marginalized communities within the department. We have very few African Americans and Latinos in command. We have very few women leaders in our department, and we have a leader in Bill Gore who has not facilitated, not made it a priority to ensure that our department looks like the community it serves, which is where you really have to start with that trust factor.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. I did some research after the shooting of Alfred Alongo in El Cajon, which of course was not sheriff department, but I learned that when there are women, women officers, they are statistically much less apt to be involved in an officer-involved shooting. And when they are involved one, it's much more likely to be found a justified shooting. So it seems like that might be one more way of increasing community policing, increasing trust in a department, and hopefully reducing the odds that you're going to wind up with one of these controversial shootings.
Yeah, you know, it goes back to what a community expects from its law enforcement. And if your law enforcement looks like the community you serve, then I think it better facilitates that expectation of trust. And, you know, we get back to implied bias and what that looks like and who it's being or not. So if we talk about implied bias, I haven't seen that study that you referenced, but there has to be an understanding. And I know within our department that we have literally thousands of people that want to do the right thing, that want to facilitate legitimate dialogue with the communities. But when it's not demonstrated at the top and they fear retaliation, it's very hard to get out there and do the job that they need to.
Very important point, Dave. Would you like to share who any of your endorsements are or who's backing your candidacy?
You know, at this time, we're really in a grassroots campaign. We're really excited about all the support we're receiving from North County, South County, along the beaches, the East County. People are really excited about a change. that could happen within law enforcement. There hasn't been a legitimate sheriff's race in over 30 years. Bill Gore himself was handed the job by the current Board of Supervisors over 10 years ago. And right now, I think the people are very excited for the chance to actually vote for a progressive law enforcement agenda, and that's what I bring.
Well, very good, Dave. Where can people get more information about your candidacy if they want to get in touch with you or just learn more?
I do have a website where you could sign up to receive ongoing mailers, and that's www.davemyers4sheriff.com. That's davemyersforsheriff.com.
Very good. Well, I want to thank you so much for joining us today on the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ, the Network for Social Justice.
Thank you, Miriam.